Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, especially the day after Christmas. I know many of you may still be relaxing, hopefully with family and enjoying a wonderful long weekend. And today I have in store for you a very special interview with Todd Raphael. Todd Raphael and I are going to talk about what trends to look for in 2017. For those of you who might not be familiar with Todd, he's one of the best known and most outspoken experts and commentators on employment and recruiting, and has appeared on in the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Time, NPR, New York Post, and elsewhere. At ERE Media, he is in touch with recruiting leaders worldwide on a daily basis and manages the ERE conferences and website. Before ERE, he built up the Workforce.com publication and worked with the business community at a lobbying group called the National Restaurant Association. He majored in politics at Ohio Wesleyan University, where he was a four-time NCAA letterman in track and a summa cum laude grad. Thank you so much for joining us today, Todd. I know you're been with family all weekend, and so we're very grateful to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so talk to me. I mean, before we were getting into the show, we were talking about some very interesting trends that you're starting to see coming up here in 2017. I know part of your job is to keep up with these trends, both on the recruitment and the employer side, based on what you do with ERE Media. So talk to me a little bit about some of the interesting stuff that you're seeing. What are companies doing as far as trying to attract new talent? What are some trends that you're seeing coming up in 2017?
Well, let me tell you what the catalyst for all of this is, why this is happening. And I would say just in general, the backdrop for all of these trends is that recruiting and hiring is becoming a more scientific kind of a thing. It's becoming a more sophisticated profession. Companies are getting more complex about it, and they're investing more time and energy into the department of recruiting, often called talent acquisition now, or even human capital. And they're trying to get much more serious and sophisticated and about how they hire people and who they hire and how to keep them and all that. The approach in the past was, in some cases, I'd say more haphazard. So that's the kind of backdrop for all of the trends that are happening now. And if you want, we can go into some of those
trends, so tell our listeners
that are a result of all this.
Tell our listeners a little bit about that for people who might not be familiar with, the employers moving a little bit more towards a computerized trend. Why do you think that's happening? Why do you think employers are focusing more on human capital or talent acquisition more now so than ever before? Why do you think that's the
case? Depending on the job, depending on the company and the location and everything else, it's a tougher market to hire in. Now, as we all know, baby boomers retiring and retired. In some cases, some employers say there's a shortage of skills. People don't have the right skills. They maybe have the wrong training. So because of various factors, some employers feel like it's a tighter market. It's tougher to attract people, tougher to keep people. So they're getting more serious about how to do it. So, for example, over the years, employers have gone to more elite colleges, more well-known colleges to hire people, and more prestigious colleges, and employers have taken a more sophisticated look at their workforces and tried to figure out, okay, where are our best employees or employers who are staying and not quitting? Where are they going to college, or are they? And some employers, including famous technology companies, famous accounting companies, consulting companies, are finding, lo and behold, the well-known elite colleges are not necessarily turning into the best employees. In fact, some employers are finding that some of their employees who didn't go to college at all are outperforming some of their employees who went to college, let alone where they went to college. In other cases, employers are finding that when there is a correlation between where you went to college and how good you are at the job, it's not necessarily an elite or famous college. It might be the University of Illinois at Chicago, for example. Nothing against the University of Illinois Chicago, but most people have never heard of it. They've heard of the University of Chicago, and they've heard of the one that we all know from sports, University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana. No one's heard of the University of Illinois at Chicago. I happen to have heard of it because my friend Lou went there, but otherwise I would never have heard of it. That's not an elite college. So some employers are finding their favorite colleges are not elite, and their favorite employees, according to the data that they're finding, maybe didn't go to college at all. So it's an example of what they're finding when they kind of dig deeper into the data of their workforce.
I find that so surprising because on my end, on the recruitment side of things, what we noticed back in, of course, like 2008, 9, 10, and 11, I felt terrible for anybody graduating from a JC or any sort of college because there were just no jobs. And now on my end, at least, we've seen, and this is more, I do more legal related staffing, and a lot more corporate jobs, but I found that a majority of employers are hiring more grads than we've seen before, where a lot of grads, irrespective of whether they went to an Ivy League or a top school or not, they just weren't getting hired. And now we're seeing across the board, though, like you said, it's not just, you know, USC or Yale or Harvard. We're also seeing people get hired out of Cal State schools and other lesser known schools that might not be as prevalent. But that's interesting that you're saying that some employers are willing to hire people without degrees. And do you think that's going to be something we'll be seeing in the coming years, not just in 2017?
Well, first of all, just to go back to something that you said, I was talking to a guy, CEO of a job board, jobboardcollegerecruiter.com, I think about 3 days ago, and he was saying that some employers are actually turned off, to tell you the truth, which is what he said, by some of the grads from elite colleges because they're not seen as scrappy, they didn't work their way through college like some other students, they didn't struggle, and they're more spoiled, and they don't know how to adapt to all kinds of different environments, whatever it might be. So in some cases, believe it or not, I guess it may even be a negative to go to certain schools. I'm not trying to generalize, like it's always a bad thing to go to a top college. That's what he said. There are some of these cases increasingly as employers are finding more kind of coddled young employees. But to go back to what you're saying about, I think your question was, are people going to be maybe less likely to go to college? I would say, from what I'm hearing, they're not less likely to be educated, but the traditional college path may differ. So there may be more online classes, there may be more three-year programs, there may be more hacking schools, famously, you know, we've heard a lot about those, you probably have, online programs, just various kinds of things that are not necessarily go live somewhere for 4 or 5 years. I think as college got and gets more and more expensive, some people say, oh, by the time my kids are 4 or my kids are 7, by the time they go to college, it's going to be $1 million. I don't think that's true at all. I think that it'll just be alternatives. You know, things get more expensive, lower cost or higher value, both alternatives come up, and I think that's what will happen more than anything.
I think it's a fascinating time right now because I wonder, though, if employers are frustrated with college graduates or if they're frustrated with the entitlement that comes along with college graduates from a top school who didn't have to work, like you said, because what we see a lot in the recruitment side of things is it's an issue with millennials. And in fact, just last week, I had a millennial on the show kind of defending millennials, who's a very good friend of mine, mm-hmm. and kind of talking about how millennials might pursue 3 different career paths all simultaneously, which a lot of employers find is a negative. And oftentimes on my recruitment side of things, you're right. If we get somebody who maybe did go to Harvard for 4 years, but they didn't work their way through school, they might not be as desirable to our potential employer because you don't know if they're going to be able to show up to work 5 days a week and work a 9-to-5 or 9-to-6 or sometimes even 9-to-10. And it's something to be said. I know I worked my way straight through college, and in between classes, I would work full time. And I do feel like it gave me a solid foundation of appreciation rather than mm-hmm. feeling that I was entitled or expected things to be given to me. Does that make sense?
And not only makes sense, but I have a bigger chip on my shoulder. I mean, I worked 2 jobs. I worked on campus and off campus, even during just during the school year, let alone on the breaks. But I worked during the school year. I worked 2 jobs, so I totally I totally get it. It was a different experience than people who didn't have to, and nothing against them, but just a different experience, yeah.
Yeah, I think it just creates a different foundation. And it's not that one is good or bad or right or wrong. I just am noticing that on my end, employers are gravitating towards the education multiplied by your experience during college.
Yeah, I think there's something to that.
And I know one thing that you had mentioned to me, and this is funny because I just was having a conversation with somebody about this right before the holiday. There was a gentleman at a real estate company who said, I want to hire an intern. And it was kind of funny. And we went through the pros and cons of millennials versus baby boomers and degreed versus not degreed. And he actually said he would be open to considering somebody as an intern who might be in their 50s. He said, I'm totally open to that. I just want the right person with the right work mindset and is willing to do that. Do you find that companies are focused too much on advertising and trying to get young talent in? Or do you find that there's still a place in the market in 2017 for baby boomers and upcoming Gen Xers?
It's very weird. In the late 90s, when I was starting in this world, I was hearing about and talking sometimes about myself about the shortage of employees because baby boomers were going to retire, and there was tons of attention to the nursing shortage. I don't know if you remember this.
Oh, yeah, of course.
The biggest shortage was nursing, and there was campaigns run, including by Johnson & Johnson, which was actually pretty effective to try to do something with the nursing shortage. And all of these things were going on to deal with the skills shortage and the labor shortage and baby boomers retiring. And then suddenly now, fast forward, we're not talking about old people anymore. We're suddenly just talking about young people, as if the old people no longer exist. It's kind of weird. And you see these ads on corporate career sites, companies where they advertise their jobs, and they all talk about, join the party and join the family, and you can go on retreats, and you can play foosball after work, and all this stuff that attract young people because they want to meet people through work. And people who are older, which maybe 60 or heck, maybe 35 these days, who may be old for some people, but that's not appealing to some people. They want to work hard and do an amazing job and go home, or they want to work from home, or they want to get to work, pick up their kids at 3 and do work somewhere at home or from somewhere else. Or they're not necessarily focused on, I want to stay at work all night and play ping pong. That's just not, and so
no,
that's
beer
not
pong
where they are.
At 10 p.m. on a Wednesday.
Beer pong, what am I saying? Beer pong, yeah. So, yeah, they're very focused on young people, almost to the exclusion of old people by their messaging. They find them to be more, in some ways, employers believe young people are hungrier, they're more tech savvy, and so on.
Yeah, there's a great founder of a website that I think I'm having on in April, and I'm drawing a blank. I'm trying to look it up right now. And it's interesting what her company is doing. It's kind of like that movie, The Intern. Did you see that one with Robert De Niro? Where they actually hire, it's a great movie for any of our listeners out there. And in the movie, Robert De Niro is an experienced professional who's 65, 70 years old and has all this know-how and applies for like this young startup-y sort of company and is, in the movie, he's brought in as an intern and actually helps contribute something because they don't have any workers over the age of 35 at this particular company. So it's a really interesting scenario. And this particular CEO that I'm interviewing in April has a company that just does exactly that. She takes workers who are over 65, typically retired, and helps them come into companies that need extra information and need extra know-how, because as much experience as you might have working 5 years at a company or even 10, it's not the same as having 30 years in an industry. So it's kind of interesting that I don't know if that's a trend we'll see down the road of bringing older workers back in as kind of mentors or expertise trainers for these young people who might not have that sort of know-how or savvy from lack of work experience.
Yeah, I think sometimes we as a society, or employers more specifically, we confuse familiarity with technology with ability or aptitude. What I mean is, like, I have this handyman, his name's Jeff, and he, I asked him how he became a handyman. He said, well, about a year and a half ago, I got laid off from Oracle after being there. I guess he was at a firm that got bought by Oracle, but anyhow, whenever the various firms were, he was there for like decades. He said, I got laid off, and I can't get a job, and I'm old, and so on. And the guy's amazing. Like, you tell him, hey, could you fix this swing set, and he'll say, you know, I don't know how, but I can figure it out. Or whatever you ask, I don't know how, but I can figure it out. So he has this aptitude, this ability. It's really amazing. But does he know Snapchat or Instagram? Maybe not. Probably not. And I think people sometimes go confuse that with tech savviness. Like, oh, they're not tech savvy if they're not familiar with the tool. And they get people who are like, oh, my two-year-old can use an iPad. They're so amazing technologically. Well, that's cute. That's great. But it's not aptitude. That's just they're familiar with the tool. I think we all kind of fall into that. We all kind of get confused with that. We forget that someone can be like incredibly good at figuring things out and all those other kinds of skills that make you a good employee or IT employee, as the case may be, even if you're not familiar with one tool or the other.
I am happy you brought up that distinction. So what you're saying is, like, we're looking, and I say we inclusively because sometimes myself, employers who are looking for people who are just bright and adaptable and have this great aptitude, it might not necessarily be just because somebody doesn't test 100% on Excel right off the bat. It just could be a lack of familiarity with Excel, and yet they might have an incredible aptitude to pick it up.
Well said. Yeah, I talked to a guy who's the director of recruiting at a Chicago sports information company, sports statistics company, and he said that he found some candidates who went through these some sort of coding schools of some kind for a few weeks, and he presented them to these managers, and they said, "Oh, here's some great candidates for you," and the manager said, "Oh, they don't know the right languages." And the guy I talked to said, "Are you kidding me? I mean, in 3 weeks they learned some computer language; they could just learn another in 3 weeks. I mean, yes, it's a different language, but they could just learn that language. If they were able to learn this one in 3 weeks, they've shown the aptitude to learn a language in 3 weeks." So he was frustrated with that. Case in point.
Yeah, so here's my question about employers then. Do you think employers are going to learn to adapt to the market and understand that candidate X might not understand ABC coding language, or might not understand Excel, for example, but they'll understand the aptitude, like you said, and they'll be willing to invest in aptitude? Do you think that's going to be something we'll see down the road?
I think that's kind of the backdrop of all we've been talking about, although I don't want to overstate as if that's happening overnight. I think that's kind of the shift that we're talking about here, is that as employers delve deeper into their workforce, into their data, into what they know about their employees or the job candidates or people who are applying for their jobs or who are visiting their websites, visiting their social media sites, they can learn about those people, and the more they learn, the more they kind of are armed with knowledge that can kind of refute some of their old assumptions.
It's probably a slow process. It sounds like there's going to be a lot of adapting happening in 2017 and beyond, including interviews. So tell me, how are interviews changing in 2017 and the coming years?
Have you ever walked into a Starbucks, which I'm sure you have?
Once or twice.
Once or twice. And you always hear people being interviewed for jobs, not necessarily at Starbucks, a job at Starbucks. And be like, you know, people meet at Starbucks and interview people for jobs.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
So if you ever, like, kind of eavesdrop, I'm sure you do, you're a recruiter.
I totally do.
You gravitate toward listening. So you hear these questions that are asked, and, like, they make people like you want to cringe, because it's like there's not a basis for their questions. Where do you want to be in 5 years? What's your favorite animal? What's your biggest strengths, your biggest weaknesses? As people like you know, these questions don't correlate to anything. The recruiting and HR profession has been studied to death for years. There's endless reams of data about it. And it's been proven a million times that these questions are like flipping a coin. They don't correlate to success on a job. They correlate to how well you've been coached to answer the questions. We all know how to answer, you know, what's your biggest weakness? Well, I'm so impatient, I can't wait to work. Or, you know, I'm so articulate, I'm so articulate, I can't manage all my radio show requests. You know, it's like these, everyone knows how to spin these questions. And where do you want to be in 5 years? No one knows, but we all have to pretend that we do. So those just don't correlate to anything. So employers are employers like Google, for example, are studying their employees and their job candidates, and they're trying to figure out, are interview questions working? And the answer is no. And so a lot of companies are trying to change the way they interview to be more scientific in some way, to figure out, okay, what questions should we actually ask them, questions that correlate to success on the job, or should we ask them how many ping pong balls could fit in a Goodyear blimp if it was, you know, the size of an average blimp or something, you know, like that. So the employers are getting much more sophisticated about questions they ask, and they're trying to ask them a job-related questions.
That's and it's interesting, too, because, I mean, my husband, I think he was on the show back in November, had brought up, he asked very open-ended questions like, why are manhole covers round? And it's not because there's a right or wrong answer, but more to get insight into the way somebody thinks and approaches answering a question, which is kind of fascinating. So I think, though, so you think it's going to be just more scientific database questions? Like, are there any examples of questions that Google has come up with or questions that people might be able to expect going forward?
I think hopefully the questions will be more related to the job. So if the job is working with a bunch of difficult people to design a billboard, and they all have different opinions, and you have to deal, like, if they're kind of manage all these difficult people, they're all going to give you their opinion, you've got to make the final decision on how to design the billboard. It's, you know, it's some question that says something like, have you ever, hey, you know, Jennifer, designer, have you ever been in a situation where you've designed something, anything, doesn't have to be a billboard, where you had a bunch of people or you were dealing with a bunch of people who all had different opinions, and how did you deal with that or something like that? Or maybe they weren't even in design, well, I don't know, maybe you wouldn't hire a non-designer for a design job, but I'm just trying to give an example, and this might work for a different job. But, you know, maybe the question would be, have you ever just been in a situation where you dealt with a lot of people with a lot of different opinions? And you had to decide how to kind of make everyone reasonably happy or at least reasonably content, and then ultimately reach a decision that would not please everyone or something like that. That might be a more work-related question than other questions.
So it sounds to me like the direction you see employers going in the interviews is more almost behavioral type questions, if I'm hearing you correctly.
Not every employer wants to go in that direction, but a lot of employers want to go in that direction.
Okay. Yeah, because I do hear what you're saying is there's all the cliche catch-all questions. Why should we hire you? You know, tell me about yourself. What's your weakness that everybody can be coached for? And believe it or not, it was funny. You were saying earlier, everybody knows how to answer those questions. I am still astounded at the amount of stupid answers I hear to what's your biggest weakness, because clients and people do still ask those sorts of questions. And I think behavioral questions are a little bit trickier to prepare for. But for our listeners out there who are going, oh, crap, how am I now going to handle this if I get asked a behavioral question? I think something that you might want to consider is just look at examples and evidence of times where you've succeeded, times where you've failed, times where you encountered challenging people or situations, and write out specific results that you produce. Because I think where people can get stuck in these questions in interviews is they get too caught up in the question and the explanation and don't actually give the result that they produce, because that's what the employer at the end of the day is looking for, is how did you come up with a solution in response to the difficult person, the situation, the challenge? It's the end result that they're looking at. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would agree with that.
It sounded like there was an and there. I invite you to share the and. I always appreciate it if people have different feedback than I do, because my way is not the only way. It's just what I notice on my side of things.
No, I thought it was well said. I was just going to go back to something you said a minute ago, which was also well said, what you're talking about, interview questions and being coached. And I think some, you think you're saying some people are not coached, which again, I think reinforces the point that those questions don't necessarily correlate to success on a job. So, again, I don't have a great LinkedIn profile. Does that mean I'm a bad employee? I don't think so, necessarily. Am I great? Do I have a great resume? I have maybe no resume. Does that mean I'm not a great employee? Not necessarily. My interview questions, did I not rehearse my interview? Does that have anything to do with my success on my job? Not necessarily. So, again, to say that, you know, some people can be coached to answer well a question. Other people maybe were busy. They didn't feel like it. They didn't have the time. They're busy with their own job or their own life, and they don't practice interviewing for jobs. And that's okay. And that shouldn't rule them out from getting a new job, I think, is my point. There are a lot of reasons why someone may or may not do well in an interview, may not have a good resume. Are those things correlated to success on a job? No, and often not.
Okay. And so that ties in to one of my next questions is, with interviews changing, are we going to see employers utilizing more online tools. And for example, what is that? The Jungian test, ENFJ, ENFP. Are people going to be utilizing more computerized tests to assess behaviors? Are there going to be robots involved? How are people going to take this to the next level in addition to more specified behavioral questions?
No and yes. I'm not so sure that ENFJ is through Myers-Briggs is necessarily correlated to success on a job or not. So, you know, they might not like that answer, but I'm not so sure that that's the scientific answer. Of course, it depends on the job and everything else, company. But I don't know that that test is necessarily the...
Or a test. I'm just wondering, do you
I think that employers are increasingly automating and increasingly, like everything else, increasingly using... some of these words are thrown around with not a real meaning, but machine learning, artificial intelligence, robotics. Some of those words are we all toss around without, we don't even know what they mean half the time. But nonetheless, employers are, if you can sum it all up, automating more. So buying and building tools that sift through job applicants and try to figure out who's the best. Tools that try to figure out who will match their culture based on some computer trying to determine the employer's culture and the preferred culture of the job candidate, which is there a match there? Those kinds of tools, I think, will be increasingly used. Some employers, by the way, are starting to use bots, or chat bots, you know, like where you, like if you go buy something like as a consumer and then this little thing pops up and says, how can I help you today? Or did you get everything you need?
And we're going to see that on the job hunting side, chat bots, really?
Absolutely. There have already been some tools launched that are bots to ask candidates how they're doing and also to do things like trying to automate parts of the process, like interview scheduling, all kinds of parts of the hiring process. Some employers trying to kind of like automate the gathering information about someone, like, you know, are you... did you go to college, or are you eligible to work in the United States, or something like that, or do you have experience with Java, or something like that kind of thing can be more and more automated. Employers are, and there are hundreds and hundreds of startup companies trying to automate different parts of the hiring process.
We have noticed on our end that the larger the corporations or law firms that we work with, the more likely they are to implement online applications. Because back in the day, you used to sit in an employer's office and manually hand fill out an application, which then if somebody could read your handwriting, they would go through or would get put in a file. And now it goes back to big data and a lot of other things. All that information is being culled, filed, put away, used to ascertain whether or not you're going to be a good fit, like you said. And it's interesting, though, because I'm going to be curious to see. I'm much more of a, you know, spiritual, into the people side of things. And I'll tell you this outright, is a lot of the best recruiting I've ever done has been based on intuition, not based on anything anybody's ever written in a resume or any keyword search. So I'm going to be curious to see the efficacy of these new systems. And I'm not knocking it. You know, I'm totally open. I think there might be a place for it in the workplace. And having been a recruiter for 14 years, I also think that the human element does play a big impact on it.
I also think that, you know, I've heard experienced recruiters like yourself talk about intuition. And I think that's a good thing, but people like you have read about, learned about recruiting, been around it, trained, have peers, mentors. It's one thing to say, I'm going to go into recruiting and use my intuition. That's different than someone like you, because you know, in college, they teach you that we all have, like, I don't know, 67 or 73 biases, you know? You've heard of those, like, confirmation bias.
Oh,
like we read things and we listen to news that we agree with, and so we start thinking that everyone else who doesn't agree with us is a stupid and the idiot, and they don't read because we're always right. Because everyone else we surround ourselves with agrees with us. So, I mean, everyone who's, you know, doesn't agree with us must be stupid. Primacy, recency, you've heard of those biases, you know, the first one, the last one. You know, we're so sick of shopping for something, the last one, we'll just buy it. I'm so sick of shopping for this bicycle, I'm just going to buy the last one. You know, so primacy, recency. So you might say it's intuition, but I think your intuition is probably based on a lot of knowledge and training and experience. And so I'm not so sure that that's just intuition.
That's an interesting perspective that you would say that, because you're right. It's not like I'm a new recruiter who's starting off 6 months in and using intuition, quote unquote, to determine whether somebody is a cultural fit with XYZ or ABC client. And so I think it's like anything else. I always believe it's part one aspect and part another. I think that if you have a stronger intuition, plus you have that multiplied by a foundation of knowledge, years of experience, training, etc., mentors, then those things multiplied together is going to give you better long-term results and data than just the information and the data strictly itself or the intuition itself. So I think it's the combination of the two, perhaps.
Yeah, I think so.
And so have a lot of these corporations or companies that you've been talking to that have been implementing chatbots or other automated tools, have they had any efficacy and have they even been utilizing it in a long enough time to be able to make any substantive, you know, guesses as or substantive results as to whether or not these are effective in long-term hires? Is this something that's come up in the last 3 months, 6 months, 6 years? It's something new to me. I haven't heard much about it. So that's why I would love your insight on it.
Well, the bot thing is pretty new in the last few months. However, the overall use of more technologies to try to screen people based on either skills or culture, that's more in the order of years, and some of the companies that are launching these kinds of products say that they help reduce, you know, the number of qualified applicants that you're getting, you're looking at, and therefore reduce the time to hire and so on. So certainly the companies that are starting out and selling these products, again, not the bots so much, which are really new, but more of the tools, they say that they help reduce time and ultimately I suppose, provide better hires because you're only looking at people who most fit your culture. So different companies have tools out there that can read, try to look at the people who are applying for your jobs and try to figure out if maybe they would fit and you might have missed them. So maybe I'm just making this example up, but maybe I would be an incredible teacher, but there's no word like education or teacher even on my background. But what I've done, let's just pretend, in a daily basis is essentially teach, and I'm good with kids or adults or I'm supposed to be teaching in this example. There are tools out there that are supposed to sort of provide a way of looking at text and analyzing and trying to figure out what I would be good at based on my experience.
So that's fascinating. It sounds to me, because what I was looking back on this, I remember 5 or 10 years ago, I had a friend of mine who was a recruiter who was looking to get an in-house recruiter job. And for our listeners who might not understand that, there's an agency recruiter, which is what I do, where companies hire an agency to come in and to fill a job internally for them. And then there's the internal recruiter who facilitates that process, who works directly for the company. And it was funny because she could not find a job in-house working as a recruiter. And lo and behold, at the time, it was when they were transitioning to the verbiage of talent acquisition. So she wasn't coming across the job. She wasn't being targeted for the jobs because that languaging was missing on her resume and vice versa. And she wasn't looking for that languaging in the job she was applying for. So I remember around that 10-year ago mark that people, these resume websites and so forth, use specific algorithms just to look for keywords and Boolean searches related to that exact keyword. And if you didn't have the word talent acquisition, you would be passed up. If I'm hearing you correctly, it sounds like the direction companies might be going is that even if the word on this particular person's resume, for example, didn't, even if the word talent acquisition was missing from that person's particular resume, the algorithm or software that some of these companies have would still be able to target that individual even if their title didn't match exactly. Would that be fair?
Fair, although in the example you give, I'm a little surprised that whoever did that search did not include Vice President of Recruiting at Home Depot or something, and they ruled them out because they weren't the Vice President of Talent Acquisition at Home Depot or something. So, I mean, the example seems dramatic, but that's exactly the kind of thing I'm talking about. That's a fairly straightforward example of just one word versus another word. I think an even more complex example would be when you have give the example of teaching, you have like concepts that you're doing or something, but you're not a teacher or something. Like you could do a job, but maybe you're you're not doing the exact same job in the same industry or something like that. That would be like a more complex, I think, example.
Got it. Less apples to apples.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got it. Well, I think it's a good thing, though, for job seekers, because I know it's almost, it created fear when those algorithm Boolean search tools first came out, when candidates would apply for certain jobs and they would get passed on. I think it was a lot of fear-based, unfortunately, because they were worried if they were missing that one, you know, integral word that the company was looking for, they would be passed on. But now, if it's taking a broader picture of the person's entire background, they're probably more likely to be called for a job if they have the right flavor, per se, of their resume. Would you say that's accurate?
Yes, I certainly hope that's accurate. Again, it depends on
the company,
the tool they're using. Exactly. Yeah, it depends on everything. You know, there's always been that old thing about you apply for a job and then you get an email if you're lucky. Many people don't get anything, right, in the past. Like, did anyone ever even get my resume? So now sometimes people get an email saying, you have not been selected for the job, but we will keep your resume on file for further review. Some people get that, and they all think, probably correctly, that no one will ever look at the resume again. Well, there are now some new tools, like there's one called Restless Bandit, some new tools that allow companies to kind of go through their current databases or resumes or job applications, you know, look through them and actually try to find some people who maybe were not selected for a job but were good and passed over for one reason or another and maybe would be good for a different job or future job. So some of these tools might be good for applicants who didn't get a job.
Yeah, it's so true, because we have the same issue with my current recruiting company. Is we probably have over 30,000 names in our database in the 7 years I've had my company. And there are so many applicants that we just lost track of, that in the early years when it was just me recruiting the first year or two, or first year for that matter, is people just weren't being tracked. There was no way to code. And so you have to kind of cull that data and try to find these people. And once every now and again, you strike gold and you find this amazing person who hasn't been contacted since 2010 when we opened. And so it sounds like companies are utilizing more and more tools like that Bandit website. What did you just say? It was called Restless Bandit?
Restless Bandit, yeah. It's interesting. I forgot the statistic at the moment, but it's funny because a lot of employers want what recruiters like yourself refer to as passive candidates. They think it's more desirable to find someone who's got a job who they can try to take from a competitor versus someone who maybe doesn't have a job but they're looking really hard for a job. It's a little unfair in my mind. I mean, what's wrong with looking for a job? Maybe your husband or wife moves and you need a new job in the area or whatever it might be. You know, you want better health benefits, or you want a better boss, you want more meaningful work. Well, whatever it is, many employers say they want passive candidates, unfortunately. But there's an interesting statistic, which I forgot the exact number, but it's something like majority of passive candidates are already in your database, meaning the database that you were talking about, you may not look through it and you think it's a bunch of people who just applied for a job and got rejected, but they're the very same people who you've actually headhunted or poached or whatever your term might be out of the competitor. They've just sort of managed to kind of portray themselves as passive or whatever it might be. They've sort of, you've contacted them, sort of feels like they're passive, but they're really no different than the exact same person who's in your database already.
Yeah, you're so right. And that's what we talk about with my own internal team all the time, is that the best placements are either referrals or people that you cold call. And there's nothing quite as gratifying being a recruiter as just finding that awesome diamond in the rough who you didn't even know was in the database. And then there's that passive person who's looking. So.
Yeah.
As opposed to all the people. And there's nothing, like you said, I've placed numerous people who have been in extenuating circumstances, who are either laid off or moved or different things. And there's certainly still great people to place in jobs. And it just seems to be employers tend to gravitate a little bit more towards people who are passively looking. So I think that's true as well. So you've had some great information. I know that it's the day after the holiday. People are probably still spending a little bit of time with family, and you've given some great trends. Anything else that you can say or that you're seeing as a trend looking forward into 2017, aside from the changes in college stuff, the way interviews are changing, bringing in artificial intelligence and bots into the interviewing process? Any other interesting trends that you see coming up in 2017?
I don't know about 2017, because that's
a week away.
soon. But I would say, if I had to think about some future things that are not, that I can't say that I've seen fully yet, but I could see coming down the pike, In fact, yesterday that it was the CEO of EY, a huge accounting consulting firm. He was saying that he's going to be less turned off by people who don't want to stay at the job for 5 years. And I could see a trend in the future being that employers are going to be more accepting of people whose career plans don't fit what the company used to think they're supposed to fit. In other words, we have a session at one of our conferences coming up about this. Like, a company asks people, if they still ask the stupid question we talked about before about where you're going to be in 5 years. So if they still ask that, right now, if I say, 5 years, I think I'm not going to be at your company anymore. They're going to think I'm an idiot for even admitting it, and a bad future employee for wanting to quit in 5 years. But I could see a time, and again, we have a session coming up about this, I could see a time where employers actually says that's okay. There's a woman, Orly Lobel, I'm going to have her on someday on your show. She's a professor down in San Diego. I can't remember if it's UCSD or USD, but she talks about if a job candidate comes to an interview and says, I don't think I'm going to be around in 5 years at your job, the company might want to invest in them. Like, oh, you might start up a company? Oh, that's interesting. Because we at Google have Google Labs, and we invest in these startup companies. You know, companies should start realizing, many people are saying, that job candidates, just the reality is they think differently than they did a few decades ago, and that's got to be reflected in the hiring process. And again, that's just starting, as I gave the example of the quote from the EY CEO about how he's going to be more accepting of people who don't want to stay at the job. But I think that's more of a future trend in the coming years.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I've already seen it within my own internal recruiting agency, and I've seen it also, you know, in the companies that we recruit for, is that the average commitment you're lucky if you get is 2 to 3 years with people right now, because like I talked to Zach about last week, lots of millennials are trying out numerous career paths, sometimes even simultaneously, and trying to figure out what do I want to do so they, and this is horrible to say, but don't wind up like some of their baby boomer parents perhaps, who wound up Poop Creek without a paddle after 20, 30 years with the same organization because their skills weren't transferable. And so I think This is all in response to the crisis of 2008, 9, 10, 11 of millennials going, oh, wait, that won't be me. And, you know, I think employers are more accepting of it. I remember I had one of the first millennials I had ever hired about 5 years ago. Bright, brilliant kid, was a good recruiter, and he had the chance to go to medical school. He's like, oh, I might want to be a doctor. I'm like, listen, if you're smart enough to be a doctor, screw recruiting. You know, I'm not saying recruiters aren't smart. I'm just saying, I don't know. I wouldn't go so far as to say I'm smart enough to go to Columbia Medical School. So I wrote him a letter of recommendation, and he went off in his merry way. He's about to be a doctor now. So, sometimes you just got to support people. And I think employers will recognize that if you have somebody great on your team, even if you only get them for a year, 2 years, whatever that next step is for them, if they're trainable and they can pick things up quick enough, it's a worthwhile investment for that 1 to 2 to 3 years.
Yeah. You know, again, these things are going to take time. Again, you walk into Starbucks and you listen to people and they're still going, what kind of animal would you want to be if you were an animal and not a tree? And, you know, so it's going to take time for these things to happen, but we cross our fingers.
Thank you so much, Todd. It has been such a pleasure. Are there any websites or things you would like people, our listeners, to check out where they can find more information on you, on your company, if any employers are out there listening and want to find out more about some of the tools you talked about?
Sure. I won't list them all, but ere.net is one. ere.net is our one of our ERE media websites.
Okay, great. It sounds like you have an upcoming conference you mentioned. Do you want to just let our listeners know when that is in case anybody, any recruiters or hiring professionals are interested in attending that?
Sure, we do two conferences a year for ERE, one in the spring in San Diego in April, and then in the fall in Minneapolis. You can check it out on our website. We also have a couple conferences affiliated with our SourceCon brand, which is for something called sourcing, which is more about finding and engaging candidates. We put on two conferences for SourceCon as well. And if you go to ere.net, you can search for all this stuff.
Awesome, Todd. Well, thank you so much. And don't sure. forget, you can always find our archived episodes either on the website at latalkradio.com or also on iTunes. You can always subscribe and download any prior shows, including this one, for free on iTunes at Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. And I hope everybody is enjoying their Hanukkah celebrations. Had a Merry Christmas and a very Happy New Year to all of our listeners out there. And thank you again for being with us on the show today, Todd.
You too. Thank you.
All right. Happy New Year, everyone. Bye.
You too.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.